Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Refugee resettlement and immigration. South Dakotans continue to look at these topics from new angles. Today, we learn about a community in France and its connections, lessons, and possibilities for South Dakota communities such as Brookings. Marie-Pierre Cacot-Baguette is a professor of French at South Dakota State. She delivers the upcoming Victor K. Webster Lecture, and she joins us now on the phone. Marie-Pierre, welcome.
Hello, thank you for having me.
All right, you want to go ahead and say your name for everyone so we get the true pronunciation other than my sort of attempted French pronunciation there.
No problem. It is Marie-Pierre Cacot-Baguette.
Thank you so much for that. I appreciate it. And now there is this community in France, and help me say this too, because Pays-Relevade in France.
Correct, yes.
Tell me something about this place and your connection to it.
Absolutely. Pays-Relevade is a small community in France. It's located in southwestern France, south central France, in a mountain area. And it's a rural community that, in some respects, is similar to what we have in South Dakota. It is in south central France. It's a very rural, it has a very long history of migration. So I thought that there were connections and they were worth exploring.
And when you say a long history, like how far back, and then jump ahead to the present time and tell me a little bit about what they're doing right now with European migration issues.
Sure, yes. The history I'm referring to is, the history of that particular community. More recently, you know, you would have a resistance during World War II, or even more recently, they welcomed a community of Kurds in the 1980s. And these stories are still present, and I think they created a terrain to make a success with the current project. So the current project is to open a center for asylum seekers. So the center opened in 2015. And the community itself, Pays-Relevade, is again in the mountains. It's very much spread out, and it's a total of about 800 people. So with the center, they welcome 70 new residents and 70 asylum seekers that were coming from about 16 different nationalities. So Afghanistan, Albania, Algeria, Djibouti, the DRC, Haiti, Iraq, Ivory Coast, Kosovo, Russia, Sudan, Syria, Chechnya, Ukraine. So you can imagine that this was very different.
And you say that they had kind of laid, you know, the groundwork for this to be successful through the work. Do people stay in this community through generation after generation? Was this something that they have a generational memory of doing?
Yes, that's a good question. And I would argue that, yes, it is the memory of these stories of migration that contributed to make the current situation a success, in my opinion. And I will address some of the things that they did to continue with this tradition of telling stories. But in addition to the stories I mentioned, stories of resistance during World War II, stories of welcoming the Kurds, there's a story not just of hosting, but of migrating. So this is a very rural area that has experienced a decline in population over the years. And in the last century, particularly, a lot of the men left the area and became famous stone workers. So they would leave the area and they would move to larger urban centers such as Paris. And their work can still be seen today, but then they would also come back to the Pays-Relevade area and tell their stories. And I really believe that these stories of migrations that have been passed down have helped people and welcome the people that they have today.
Tell me a little bit about how it works on a practical basis. You know, 70 new residents, that's not a small number. And people coming from, you know, different countries, different backgrounds, it seems like logistically it would be a challenge for a community of that size. Yeah. How are they addressing just the physical needs and logistics of asylum seekers?
Mm-hmm. Well, the center has a director, so there's a staff, and so it's people who are equipped to do this. The center comes with support for the asylum seekers, so they have access to health coverage, and that's physical health, mental health as well. They have access to legal counsel. They need support to put their application file together for a refugee status. Mm-hmm. And also they have access to language classes. So all of this is provided through the center. And in addition to that, and that ties back to the stories of migration that I was telling, there's tremendous volunteer support from the community. So as soon as the community decided to open the center, pretty much everybody got involved, and some organizations were formed to specifically help with the opening of the center and support the asylum seekers. So this is an effort from the community, and it was led by the mayor when the mayor was first aware of the possibility of opening an asylum center. He did some research. He visited other sites, rural sites that had done this. And before he went ahead, he decided to open this to the community. So he had several town hall meetings, and he knew that a third of the people attending were in favor, a third were against, and a third were undecided. So he engaged in the dialogue, and you see people ask questions, and he presents the pros and the cons, and then they decided to go ahead. And so the pros, for the most part, what he promised did come to fruition. One of the items was the building itself. So the building where the asylum seekers are housed used to be a home for retired people in the community. And so it came in disrepair, and they decided, what should we do with this? Well, that was one way to keep the building and also save money. Mm-hmm. So they created jobs, too, for remodeling the building, but also 5 jobs to manage the center. Also, the people, a lot of asylum seekers that come to this center, it's usually at least a year, sometimes 18 months, while they're putting the application together and they're waiting for the reply. And so some of them come with families and children who go to school. So this influx of children meant that they were able to save one of the classes at the local school. And that's significant in a local area. Mm-hmm. And, right. Of course, part of the help that the government supports, that provides for the asylum seekers, is a very small stipend of, I think, something like barely 7 euros a day. And, you know, that's something that the asylum seekers spend in the local community and shops and so on. And so that also helps to a small extent the local businesses. So that part is still working.
Right. And a third of the people showed up in really against this. So what were the challenges that they anticipated? What were the negatives, and how did they address them?
Absolutely, yes. They addressed it through dialogue and these town hall meetings because the response was positive and they decided to go ahead. But some of the concerns were concerns that you would hear over here, that we already have too many immigrants, that they're taxing on the system, and it's going to change the culture and so on. But what I've been able to observe, and by the way, my research involved a week-long sequence of interviews there with the mayor, the asylum seekers themselves, the director of the center, farmers, people in the community, journalists, local journalists, TV people, And overwhelmingly, people said that some of these concerns were disproven. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that the asylum seekers did was to really talk to people and volunteer to reach out to the community. And so I have some samples of feedback that they received from a local school. For instance, they went and they talked to the children. And it's overwhelming, the children's reaction to the asylum seekers. Even though there's a language barrier, they were able to discuss their daily life in Perlevade. And some of these stereotypes and concerns that existed before were completely shattered.
Hmm. What do you think, you know, as a professor of French at South Dakota State University, and if you're just joining in, the lecture is coming up. Maybe I don't have the date for that lecture real quick. We'll have to find that.
It's tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Thank you so much. What time?
It's tomorrow at 7 o'clock, and it's in the Art Museum at South Dakota State University.
Perfect. Thank you. What do you think some of those messages or some of the lessons that might be able to transfer from this community in France to a community like Brookings or other communities in South Dakota? What are your thoughts after your research?
I found that the preparation is key. And again, relying on the history and the geography of the host area is essential, but also more immediate preparation, such as the one that I described, that the mayor did and that the community did as a whole, and also the role of culture. And one of my areas for my research is visual media, and the way the local media approached the asylum seekers, I think, was essential. They deliberately went against some of the national media that were reporting on the asylum seekers and decided to let them present themselves. So the local TV literally just gave them their own cameras and microphones and let them go out in the Perlevade community, talk about the community as they saw it and talk about themselves as they saw it. And I think that was essential.
Oh, that's interesting. And what did you notice as you looked at some of that media? What was the difference? Was it striking that you could tell, like, oh, this is a completely different representation?
Yes, it really was. Again, this deliberate initiative to make sure that their voices and their perspective was heard was really innovative, and it's not something that you always see. And also the way that they incorporated this new perspective into their own geography and their own cultural geography. One of the sequences that you see is the asylum seekers filming the area, so it's very recognizable to the local people. You see the woods, you see the forest, you see the mountains, but they're narrating it in their own language. So it could be, you know, Arabic or a language that is not French. And just this way of presenting it and highlighting some of the items in that scenery that are key to an asylum seeker, I think really changed their perspective. What they notice is the post office or the store where you can buy a phone, things that would connect them to their home or that would connect them to their new home. So that was really fascinating.
Interesting. That kind of opens up, all kinds of ideas. Well, go out and see 7 o'clock tomorrow at SDSU, Professor Marie-Pierre Cacobaguet. She's a professor of French at SDSU, and she's giving the Victor K. Webster Lecture. Thank you so much for being with us here today. Come back anytime.
Thank you.